Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM with Gillette. When we show our best side, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
Game on 2FM.
Massive thank you to Chris and Kira. It's Friday, May the 8th, and this is Game On.
Coming up on the show, we'll chat to former Monaghan football star Dick Clerkin, who is also the chair of the GAA's Medical, Scientific and Welfare Committee.
Well, I can't wait for our frontline Friday hero. We talked to Irish pop Linda Injagu, who has been at the front line as a student nurse at a COVID-19 ward in Talla Hospital.
And we will shoot the breeze on all things athletics with Dublin Track Club coach Phelan Kelly.
Oh, brilliant. All that and much more between now and the Europeans' biggest dance party. We'd love to hear from you. You can text us on 51552 or you can tweet at GameOn2FM. Marie, we're the warm-up act for Europeans' biggest dance night, the two of us. Look at it.
We've made it. Donegal, I know yesterday I gave out about the rugby players and I said, why always the rugby players who are flouting the COVID laws? Well, Christian Eriksen has done the same thing. He's got in trouble. He was warned by the guards, well, whatever they call them in Italy, the police. He was flouting the lockdown rules, but as it turns out, because he moved from Spurs to Inter Milan, he didn't have time to get anywhere to live and the hotels obviously closed down. So he's been shacked up at their training ground. He's been running around the car park. There's a few staff living there who have been self-isolating. There's a chef there, but that's where he's been.
No, I'm not having it. Like, you can't say that. But like, what's he earning a week? You can't be like, I'm struggling to find a place.
Well, everything shut down very quickly.
Yeah, I love the way.
Apparently as well, he tried to get on Ashley Young and Romelu Lukaku's couches and they said, look, we're kind of busy.
Oh, that's bad teammates, isn't it?
It is bad teammates.
You have to question them there for that. You're right, though.
It might not be that sound, though.
But you all, it's a leap of faith with a new guy in a club, isn't it? You have to kind of work it out and... The thing is, there's always the stars, but you want to get in with the popular guys in the dressing room who normally aren't really the stars of the team. You need to find out who's good crack in that dressing room, and if you can break that, he should have done his homework before it, though. He deserves to be running around the car park.
Who the solid lads are. And good news as well from the Inter Milan front, because they've tested all the players in the squad and they've all tested negative for coronavirus, so they are set to go back training. And I'm sure that once that happens, then they will very shortly be playing as well. So, a bit of positivity.
So, none of them have the virus. So, what happens now? They put them all into a house, keep them safe, and then
let them do a bit of training, yeah, and get ready for when they decide to resume the league.
It's not that glamorous being a sports person with the world to come, isn't it? I know we're all there, brilliant, let's get sports back, but we're just putting these people in houses and going, okay, in a while you're going to entertain us.
Or in Ericsson's case, in the training ground. With a chef, though, positive.
Yeah, believe me, I'd say he wasn't too badly looked after. So what else is the news? I was looking at it there. I know it's not massive news, but Katie Taylor, three big fights to go to cement her legacy. Does Katie Taylor really need to cement her legacy? It's done.
Well, Katie Taylor's standards would be a little bit different to the standards that we have for her. Yeah. So in our minds, she's an absolute legend. But in her own mind, she'll have targets and goals and people that she will want to take on and fight and go a little bit further. Because boxing... like, she's not going to be doing it forever, so she has to maximise what she can when she can, and it's difficult now because there's a lockdown, so she'll have to hold off.
Yeah, the 3 points she made. I want to leave a great legacy behind me. Tick, you've done it. I want to make history in my sport. Done. And I want to inspire the next generation. Boom, you've probably done that for four generations on, Katie. You're done. I hope you get a payday.
I know she gets a lot of love, but I don't know if she gets so much appreciation. I think when she does retire and we realise... when she's gone and there isn't another Katie Taylor, all that she achieved for sport and for women's sport, I think, in particular. So
it's a bit like Sonia, who you were chatting to. It isn't until they're gone you appreciate them.
Exactly that. And there is a little bit of breaking news this afternoon. It's been confirmed that the All-Ireland Ladies Football Championship will not take place in its current format because of the coronavirus, quite obviously. But they said that they are going to follow the guidelines in the government's roadmap and they will be consulting with the game's various stakeholders and outlining their plans in due course. So it's just another competition that will have to try and reinvent itself in another format to cope with the unknown.
Do you know the way we always chat about the fixtures and the schedule? I know this isn't a great time, you know, in the sport, but is it an opportunity for GAA to fix the fixtures, fix the schedules and get them in place?
Well, you know what?
What?
That is very, very good timing of you to say that, because we have a former Gaelic footballer on the phone right now. But he's developing a different career off off the pitch now. He is on various committees. He is now on the GAA's new dedicated COVID-19 advisory group, and he's also chairman of the GAA's Medical, Scientific and Welfare Committee. Dick Clerkin, committee man now, I'm going to be calling you. You are very welcome to Game On.
How you doing? It was a great segue there, but
don't I guess.
An awful mouthful for you as well.
I got really good at reading the running order on the show.
I see that, no coincidence.
That's a hell of a title.
It is. I don't know which one I'll pick now for the purposes of this meeting. But yeah, I suppose I've got involved in a few things now. There's no turning back.
So, Dick, you are obviously in tune with everything that's going on and are set to be more in tune because you're going to be part of this advisory group. And there are really important decisions that are going to have to be made over the next few months as we kind of try to navigate our way through these unknown times that the coronavirus has brought. Just so far, what have your observations been of, you know, where we're at with regard sport?
Yeah, I suppose there's a couple of things that obviously I'm involved in some of those oversight committees, but I'm also still a player. I'm a club player. So I've been very much involved with our own club and trying a part of the management team there, still playing and trying to see how can we manage our way through that. So I'm experiencing that. I'm also a coach with the underage team here in my new club where I'm living now in Monaghan Harp. So very conscious of the challenges that parents are facing and how everyone's anxious to get back. And they're looking at the underage players as a group and can they do something different than the inter-county of the club. So I suppose I'm looking at it from lots of different angles, and each different group have their own sort of agenda and different arguments for and against of moving things on. And I suppose this new advisory group starting next week, Marie, we'll have to look at all of that, because there isn't one silver bullet solution for everything. We have to take all the different stakeholders, if you want to use that term, on board and seeing what's appropriate, taking on all this advice coming from the medical experts. So it's very challenging, but we sort of have to just listen to all the different voices that have an opinion, which are all merited, and try as best we can make the right decisions.
It's a broad enough title for a committee, the COVID-19 Advisory Group. So what are you going to be tasked with in reality? What are you going to be trying to achieve?
Yeah, I suppose it's quite a broad brief, really. It's a sort of the terms of reference. We've got a staged approach. So first of all, it's about the return to training and recreational use of the facilities for both children, underage players, then adults, club, county, then the return to actually play games, be it competitive or not, for both children, underage players, adults, club and county, and then the whole aspect of the safety requirements around venues for spectators, officials, club members to run the facility. So all of that has to be taken into consideration. Each one of their own, there's quite a lot in it. So we have to cover all of that and see what are the appropriate steps, timelines and risk reduction measures that are appropriate for the games, considering the breadth of the GAA. And that's the biggest challenge that we're going to face here, Marie, is just the sheer volume and size of the club networks and the amount of active members that we have.
Dick, just on that, is that the return to play protocol? Is that the way it'll run? It'll start at grassroots level. You're chatting there underage. Is that how we see it going forward? Because everyone's looking at the big days in Croke Park, but should we really be putting our attention at grassroots level?
Well, it's too early to say. Like, at the end of the day, and this is just really a personal viewpoint at this stage because the committee hasn't met. But like this is a public health issue. So like how you can't really differentiate, again, it's just me personally speaking, between club, county, irrespective. It's a public health issue. So you have to look at it from a risk level for public health. You know, every player has parents, has family members, has grandparents. You know, it's not like professional sports, not like that you can cocoon your panel and make sure that they don't, you know, potentially spread virus or contraction. You know, GAA players are very unique sort of things. You know, so on that basis, there's the argument that the club player, the club unit, is much higher risk than inter-county because there's less people. So all of that will have to be taken into consideration in terms of what games are appropriate to start at different timelines. But again, that's all up for discussion. There's nothing has been set in stone. There's broad guidelines that were issued last week following on from what the government had gained, and that's the starting point. But listen, things are changing so rapidly. We're learning more all the time. You know, everything will be up for discussion, up for debate as things progress.
So, Dick, if everything is up for discussion and debate, is the date, the October date of no inter-county games to be played, is that up for discussion?
Well, that's the date at the minute, right? So, like, until it changes, until somebody either makes a decision based on advice, medical or otherwise, that possibly may be. No, that's not my decision. That will have to be, but that's the date at the minute. Like, everything, like, 2 weeks ago, there was still a leave insert. Okay? It was all discussions. Today, it's been cancelled. That's how quickly things of that magnitude are changing. And so the GA can be no different. You have to, people need some sort of clarity. They need some sort of assurance or timelines and taking on the advice that was there, looking at what was in front of them. That's the date that's set. Now, if that is up for changing, so be it. But a lot of things will have to happen in terms of the positive trend around the spread of the virus, the responsibility around the public in terms of when we start to release ourselves in society, that we can be seen to do the right thing and things don't get out of control. But again, that's all ahead of us over the coming weeks.
Dick, you mentioned that they're still playing with your club and talked out for Monaghan 169 times, so no better person to ask. What's the feeling among the players in the dressing room?
Probably frustration out there. We took a decision there last week just with the club. Like, we had been trying to sort of keep boys ticking over and doing Zoom training sessions and top-ups and stuff like that. But we just sort of made a call, take a two-week break, just, you know, because it's going to be months before we get back out on the field. It's very difficult to be keep at players, to keep them sort of motivated, and if almost now the focus again for myself and club players, I think, is just to whatever your new normal is in terms of your own family, if you have kids at home, work requirements, or even if you had somebody that has been impacted by it, just try and manage life, you know, and fit in sport where you can, keep active, keep healthy, and then when there's better clarity in terms of the timelines for a tournament to play, there will be plenty of time. And so that was the one thing coming from the latest GA guidelines, that they will give adequate time for teams to ramp up in preparation and train. It's not just going to be, right, we'll set a date and in 2 weeks' time we're going to be playing club championship. It's not going to be like that. So there's plenty of time once you don't let yourself get away too far in terms of fitness and weight and all the rest. And that is challenging at the minute. We're all eating more. We're all drinking more, even though we shouldn't be. So it's just to manage yourself. But there will be time to get your back up to match fitness when that comes around.
Now, that's all great in theory, but knowing some of the managers that I know, and I'm sure some that you know as well, they only operate in one gear, and that's fifth gear full steam ahead. I can't imagine how easy it's going to be to get them to take a step back and tone it down a little bit.
Well, again, that's their decision, right? Like, as I say, there's broad public health guidelines in terms of what has been asked of the society, and a voracious manager like that, you know, if he wants to choose to operate outside of that and ask his players to do more than what is advised, well, that's up to himself and has his own conscience, you know, in terms of, you know, as it stands, players in any code, there's no collective training. So whatever you can ask a guy to do, it's within his own home with whatever equipment he has, and that's very limited, let's be honest. You know, players don't have home gyms. They're very young. There's only so many times you can go out running the roads and do so much in the yard. So it's trying to operate within those confines for the next couple of weeks and hopefully not into too many months to just keep ticking over and to keep yourself mentally fresh. Because you want players hungry. You know, one of the big things in Donegal, we all know this with playing football and sport, you want to be hungry. You don't want to be, by the time this comes around, almost sick of ticking over and doing a bit. You want to be just sort of fresh, like I always used to be coming back into winter training. You're mad to get at it because you're taking that wee dip. So keeping players hungry and fresh and in reasonable shape to get back into play should be, in my opinion, the key for managers.
Dick, it is very complex. We're, you know, the everything surrounding where we are now is very complex, and we know the association are trying to get some clarity around some of the issues that have arisen since we got that roadmap last week. And one of them is the challenge of social distancing in contact sport. That is difficult to even imagine how we can social distance in contact sport. I know you're on the committee, so you're going to have thought about it anyway.
Well, listen, we don't have to be, you know, a genius to figure out that if you're going to play a competitive game of Gaelic football, soccer, rugby, social distancing doesn't apply. Like, the two of them are just not compatible. You know, you're not going to have a competitive game where you can't mark your man, you can't tackle or win for breaking ball. So, you know, it's a case of when you get to the stage that playing games in that competitive fashion, you know, there will be a time, and as I was saying to this to a few people earlier, there will be a time when it is okay to train. There will be a time that it's okay to play and get into that competitive environment. So our job as the committee is to make sure we pick the right time. Not too soon, but it causes a bigger problem, because as I was saying earlier, the sheer scale and volume of the GAA is in many ways its greatest asset over the years. But in terms of return to play from this, it's going to prove to be its greatest challenge. So it's our job to make sure that the time that is set for return to train, return to play, is not too soon, but equally not too late, because you'll come under pressure and you could, you know, undermine an awful lot of goodwill and good support out there. So it's getting that timing right, which is very difficult, but that's the challenge that's ahead of us.
Dick, there was a lot of eyebrows raised when it was announced as well that GAA grounds were going to be locked until the 20th of July. We had Tony Kelly on last night just speaking about what a blow it is to small communities and parishes in particular, because they're not just pitches that you go to, they're social hubs, they give people security and they're a big part of people's lives. Is this something that you're going to be conscious of when you are going to meet next week?
No, absolutely. That's one of the elements under the brief, Marie. And funny enough, I had a call yesterday. Just somebody got my number and had a call, and that was exactly his point. He says that their club, I'll not name the club, like many clubs around the country, have great facilities. They've got walking tracks, very safe, very spacious. And his basically point was, well, surely there's a way that we can utilise these facilities for the betterment of the community in a safe, manageable way. And that's a very valid point. So that will have to be considered. But it has to be done, and we have to be sure that it can be applied to every club in every county all the time. So make sure that, because, you know, you just give an unlimited licence to go, you know, if it goes wrong and you find that it's rules aren't been adhered to you, you're in the worst in the world. And the GAA then is held up as sort of not doing the right thing. But it was a very valid point. It is a very valid point. And absolutely that would be discussed and try and make those changes and release that at the appropriate time. But the date is set as it is. And for it to be changed, well, we have to be very sure that it's safe to do so, obviously.
But Dick, is it realistic to think that perhaps it might be?
If it can be proven, taking on external medical advice, I don't want to be sounding like a long playing record, you know, taking the advice externally in terms of whether the virus, the levels of contraction in the community and all that, that's one big element of it. But then do we have the management, the systems within each club to police them? Because you can't just let a club open and let people decide themselves. I'm not sure that would work. We already know that even in public parks, and that would actually play a lot in it, when public parks and other facilities start opening up over the coming weeks, we will see how the public react. And if that goes well, that would give you a greater degree of confidence in terms of using GAA facilities, wouldn't it? That would be reasonable to assume. So we learn an awful lot as things progress over the next couple of weeks. So July is a long way away. I'd like to think at the end of May, coming into June, you'll learn an awful lot more about what's more feasible. And then you might be in a position to look at those days. But that's the way they're set at the moment, for good reason.
Dick, it is a massive brief that you have to take in with this COVID-19 GAA advisory group. But just Marie's point, there's facilities. But there's also, we've seen it in other sports, soccer are looking at maybe rule changes to have more subs on the bench. Is there rules within the game itself that you'll even look at?
I think when you're getting into that, there's so many other such bigger aspects of this, you know, looking to tweak a bit rules, like really what impact are you going to have? And this is Jean, just me personally, don't I think you know yourself, a game, the competitive environment and the white heat of a game, you know, if players know that the game is on, everything else is out the window, you play the game as you always had. You're not going to change a player's mindset by a small rule change, you know, so the game will be the game. If we have to fundamentally change how we play our games for the purpose of getting out a few months earlier, you'd be questioning, is there any merit in going back at all? That would be my opinion. You know, if people want Gaelic games, rugby, soccer, to get back, they want to get back to what they were, not some sort of hybrid version just to get away. I don't think that's going to appeal to an awful lot of people. Now, uncompetitive games might be something, because you're going to have... See, when you get into the detail of all these, this is where it gets really complex. That, you know, you'll have certain teams and players will be impacted by the virus that mightn't be able to play. They might have to be cocooning, or they might have to be social isolation. So there's going to be massive issues around the fairness around this in terms of asking people to compete. So there might be an element of having uncompetitive recreational games to some of this. And again, that'll be looked at as well, because people just want to get back playing. They just want to get back onto the pitches. They just want to get out of their homes, but in a safe way and a sustainable way.
And just before we let you go, Dick, the thoughts of having no Ulster Championship this year, maybe just a knockout championship, what would you think?
Well, a knockout championship, you know, if you lay the dice on the table now, a knockout championship, old school, Ulster through the All-Ireland semi-final, final, if you thought you could have that in the calendar, I think most people would take your arm off at this stage. So if we could have any sort of championship at all, be it in terms of club, inter-county, it'll be brilliant, you know. And I suppose we'll work as hard as we can and try and educate ourselves and all the different aspects, learn from all the different sports, like what's happening in Germany, New Zealand, how things are going there, best practices, and see what we can bring into our own games, because we've got a very unique challenge. You know, the GAA is always faced with challenges. It's always unique because there's nowhere like us around the world. This is no different. So we'll try our best to make the right decisions. Listen to everybody. I've already gone out. I've got the county chairman to go out to all the clubs to look for their feedback that I can bring to the table on Wednesday to try and get as much voice from the club networks and anyone who has a voice. So to try and inform ourselves, listen to everybody that's out there, and that'll give us the best chance to make the best decisions.
Right, well, we wish you well with that, because it is a big responsibility as we try to move forward. Dick Clerkin, thanks so much for joining us.
Game on 2FM.
Okay, each Friday we put the focus on our sporting heroes that selflessly work on the front line. Now, most rugby players can moan about the smallest thing, but there tends to be an honour among prop forwards to never make an excuse. Thankfully, Linda Injagun brings that honour to a next level. Working 13-hour shifts in Tallaght Hospital, either side of training session, this front row forward always answers Ireland's call, and we're delighted she joins us now. Linda, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
Did you ever get an introduction like that, Linda?
No. Thank you so much.
Linda, tell us, it's been a crazy few months for us all, but you're on the front line, you're working in Tallaght Hospital. Can you explain to us maybe over the last 3 months how your working environment has changed?
I think it has changed dramatically. Obviously, when you go to work, working with COVID, well, first of all, Six Nations, that was challenging as it is. But I don't think that you can compare at this point. It's been challenging, I would say. Yeah, that's probably the word I would use. It's definitely been challenging. The last few months, but that's exciting. At the same time, you want to be challenged. But COVID is a whole different experience.
Linda, I spoke to you a few months ago in the middle of the Six Nations. It actually feels like an absolute lifetime ago. And you were doing your college work, and you're a student nurse, and you had the rugby going. You were trying to juggle everything, and then fast forward a few months, and you're on the front line, saving lives and making such a difference to people's lives.
Oh, that's what I do. It's why I love nursing. You kind of have to just put the sleeve up and do your work, like on the pitch and off the pitch at work. You just have to just dig in and do what you do best. And I love what I do. It seemed like a lifetime ago when we last spoke.
It does. Donegan mentioned prop forwards never using excuses. But is there anything at all that can prepare you for the situation that you're in now? Anything that you've taken from the last few months, your rugby journey, that can even put you in a position where you can cope with their current situation better?
I'll definitely say, like, we have an amazing support. So it's definitely being able to really talk to what everything is happening. I think that's, for me, I found that really beneficial. The fact that we were all in this together, like on the rugby pitch, my teammates, when we're there, we're all together. And then even when I go back for nursing, I have my colleagues. So we're all able to, like, just talk about our experience. And obviously we're out there dealing with it. So we're able to come together. And if something happened, we're able to just really talk about it. And there's so many support there, because it's definitely a different experience to others. but you're really thrown into it. And you do need to have a strong mindset to be able to cope.
Linda, just for people, for myself even, a COVID ward, like, can you tell us about it, your experience? Like, this is really frontline stuff.
Yeah, it is. It's really like going, obviously your day is unpredictable. You don't really know what's going to happen. We have a lot of training, so we're able to use the training that we have gotten to kind of implement it in how to really care for COVID patients. And we have like PPE that are there. So it's been different, but we have all the training that are required for us to stay safe and everything.
You must give people a lot of comfort as well, because anyone that I've heard who's had COVID or been in intensive care and came out of it, any interviews that I've heard, they've always mentioned about how they were never alone. There was always somebody there with them, a nurse. Anytime they opened their eyes, looked up, there was somebody caring for them. And that's really special to hear that.
Yeah, I think it's at this time, patient, everybody, including myself, we're as the most vulnerable place that we ever could imagine, and especially patients. So we do really need to be there for them, because obviously family members cannot be there. So we're pretty much the people that they see 24/7. So we really do need to be there for them, especially at this difficult time. Because what a family can bring, we can never replace the family. So we do try our best and everything to be there for them, especially at their most vulnerable time.
Speaking of family, we spoke to your teammate Jenny Murphy last night. We were reliving the good days winning the Grand Slam in 2003.
Oh, she's a legend.
But off the field, it's moved an awful lot, Linda, hasn't it? Like, we chat there that you're working 13-hour shifts and trying to train, whereas the English and French teams, they're professional now, and then you have to go out and compete against these girls.
Yeah, it is very... it's very hard on us, but we never complain. Like, we never seen, because we're so used to just putting our head down and going on training. We don't know what it's like to have a break. but we would love to just play rugby and just focus on that 100%. It's hard. Hopefully in the future it's changed. Hopefully we see the like of England and France moving the right direction. So hopefully in a few years time we'll be able to follow them that pathway. That would be great for the future rugby players to come into a sport and not be amateur and actually a professional.
Yeah, and Linda, you would have tasted that last Christmas, Leinster versus Harlequins, played in Twickenham. Like, that's a professional. Sorry.
Yeah, it was. I feel very honoured to even be able to play alongside some in Twickenham and against such a big tough side of Harlequins. It was amazing. But at the same time, we need that. We need to build that more. We need to play against teams like that more. And it was such a great game that it was a pity. It was only one game, you know. We do need to move towards that step a little bit more for us to even be able to achieve a level of playing professional. We need to play against sides of Harlequins and challenge ourselves. I think we definitely need to have more games like that because it was really, really, really fun. And I can't wait. I can't really wait for to play another game. So hopefully in the Aviva.
Well, there we go. You heard it here first now. Linda and Jungen onto the Aviva for a big game. Look, Linda, there is a huge amount of uncertainty around contact sport, around calendars. You were supposed to have World Cup qualifiers. Everything is up in the air. What are your thoughts about what the future holds, the short-term future for the Ireland women's rugby team?
I always stay positive. Although it doesn't look like it's really hard now to stay positive where everything is so uncertain. But we do need we'll be training. We continue to train. We continue to bond together as a team, and we just really hope for everything to kind of calm down and the whole rugby and sports and to really start back up because I do miss it so much. We kind of take it for granted until it's taken from us. So hopefully everything is so uncertain now, but hopefully we get something soon. Because I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one. Everyone is dying to get back to play, to be on the pitch, to do what they do. So
yeah. Linda, we never take you for granted, especially in the Green of Ireland, but at the moment, looking after everyone in the COVID ward in Talla Hospital, thanks for everything you do, and thanks for joining us on Game On.
Thank you so much, Danica. Thank you so much. And it was an honour for you to come in and present us jersey. So
I loved it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks so much,
thanks,
Linda.
Best of luck.
Game On 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. I'd just like to apologise for the quality of Lyndon Jungen's line there towards the end of her interviews. And hopefully we'll have it sorted for our next guest who will be with us very, very shortly. But Danica, something I wanted to put to you. I'm not sure if everybody's aware, but Linda only took up rugby very late in life. She was in college. And for her to go on and represent Ireland and excel as well, anyone that follows women's rugby will have seen her score some tries in Donnybrook earlier this season. Danica, how difficult is it to do what she did?
It's very hard to do what she did in some positions, but for a tight head.
Like, careful now.
No, honestly, some positions in rugby are easier than others. And like backs, that's just easy. You get the ball and you try to run as fast as you can. And we've all seen Bevan Parsons' brilliant try. But honestly, for me, Linda's try was incredible. And what I loved about it was her teammates' faces. Like, of course, all the backs are running in. But you just see Lindsay Pete, and like, it's where Lindsay scored herself. And I think that's what's beautiful about rugby. And look, we've seen it with some of the great players. Like, John Hayes came to rugby really late. You can come to the game really late. It's a serious disadvantage. And the way it's gone now, it's actually incredible what Linda does every time she gets out there. So, and then it's actually quite annoying that you hear that she's putting in 13-hour stints, and then she's going out to play against professionals week in, week out. You know, it's so, so tough.
She's moved now down to lives near Talla, but before that she was living in Rush, so she was getting buses into town and then getting more buses to get to training and work, and she was just on the road constantly. So
yeah. Half hour start on the bus. I don't think, you know, you wouldn't hear...
She wouldn't be sitting beside Johnny Sexton.
Exactly. I just would say Tyke Furlong isn't on the same bus.
Now, moving on to our next guest. He's a very familiar face and voice at athletics meets all around the country. I actually don't think I've ever been to one when he wasn't there. It'd be strange, actually, if I didn't see him. He's also a coach at Dublin Track Club, an athlete in his own right as well. And I'd have to say he's definitely one of the biggest supporters of athletics in the whole of Ireland. Phil and Kelly, you are very welcome to Game On.
Cheers, Marie.
We're all about the introductions today.
Yeah, exactly. That was quite lengthy. That was something we prepared earlier as well. But to be on board with you both, I don't think I'm much of an athlete anymore if I ever was, but I think maybe the coaching is the stronger suit right now, all right?
Oh, you had some good days. Don't talk yourself down.
But it's important within a club and even a sport, Phelim, isn't it? The people that do it, like you take part, but you do so much more off it and away from it. And you're speaking about coaching there. How have you enjoyed it?
Yeah, I think I've kind of been involved through individual sport, individual obviously competing, but then kind of more of an elite end. I was probably actually pacemaking, even like training with some of Ireland's best athletes, even occasionally with Dervla O'Rourke to Fionnuala McCormack, and then even some of the international men. So, you know, I've always kind of been helping out, and I've always found that kind of rewarding. So, you know, moving into the coaching has certainly kind of given me, you know, I think you've got to judge. I think you're talking about even positions. You've got to judge also where you can have your best impact. And, you know, I love athletics and being involved in a sport. I think I've just naturally come to coaching rather than saying, you know, I want to be a super coach or I'm going to become a coach. It's just kind of naturally aligned that this is what I can offer best and stay in every kind of level of the sport, from, you know, grassroots and right up to elite athletes, and trying to get them ready now for the Olympics, whenever that actually might take place, is another question.
Phelim, having a teaching background, does that help when you're moving into coaching?
Yeah, well, I think changing is the different things. It definitely prepares you for getting a bit of static and a bit of flack, and also you have to learn how to kind of, I suppose, impose yourself. Like, You might know what you're doing, you might know what you're saying, but like, you've got to try and develop your presence, you know. And I think teaching helps you with kind of that sense of structure and delivery and kind of dealing with challenging situations. I've been in, you know, in a couple of different schools of various levels, but some great characters, saying like St. David's in Artain. I filled in for Brian Talty near the end of his career, and certainly he kind of gave me a pat on the back and said, best of luck, Sham. And, you know, I certainly learned a lot there anyway, because I was coming in with some new PE and kind of trying to reinvigorate some of the different strands of PE. So he was saying, you know, put the hat on and best of luck in terms of like trying to deliver that message and get through and with a group of people.
Well, I'd say Brian Talty never held back from anything in his life anyway, so if he had an opinion, he'd very, very quickly tell you. Tell us about Dublin Track Club, Phelim, just what your philosophy is when it comes to it and why you set it up.
Yeah, well, you had Sonia O'Sullivan on last week. So I lived in London in around 2005 to 2006 in Teddington. I kind of got to know Sonia there, running with her. And then through that, kind of got to know her husband, Nick Badeau. And it's kind of modelled on his. He's an agent and a coach of the Melbourne Track Club, which he founded. So it's kind of loosely based on that, except obviously we're not fully professional yet, but we're aiming to kind of operate at that type of international and professional level, kind of learn from that. And through kind of my roles as kind of like being an athlete, pacemaking, and essentially, you know, one of my nicknames basically before was like I was basically like a caddy, I suppose, in certain aspects. You know, you're carrying the bags, water bottles, taking splits, obviously helping out with the pacing, going to training camps. And then I found that, you know, when you try to help people in athletics, I tried to steer them in different directions. After a while, you actually realise, right, I think I'm going to have to be the coach here to give them the proper direction. And then you obviously earn your stripes from, you know, you have to start off with whatever athletes you've got. And then you kind of win, you know, some national titles. And then now coaching some international athletes. And obviously then your voice becomes stronger and people listen to you more, even though your message is the same. So, you know, that's kind of been like a short guide to my journey, but kind of being involved with a lot of the best Irish athletes in that sense of a caddy type form and an assistant. Then with Nick, I would have been involved with Mark English for a while as that kind of eyes and the ears on the ground when he won a European indoor medal in 2015 in Prague, a silver medal. So I went to South Africa with him, went different places. So you're observing a lot of the athletes. So I kind of gathered probably a lot of skills without, I think a lot of people get into things, you don't plan on doing it, but you're gathering experience and you're gathering kind of skills, which then kind of prove fruitful in a position that you land yourself in.
Phelim, you mentioned that they're a teacher, a caddy, but you're also an innovator. You know, have you found different ways to make things happen for athletes?
Yeah, well, you know, the traditional sense for athletics, you know, and you look back in the glory days, either they went to America, you know, like the greats, like even Sonia, Ray Flynn, Mark O'Sullivan, Eamon Cox, and even back to Ronnie Delaney, and the sub-4 mile there was commemorated. But I've watched from the Melbourne track, it was like, people, okay, you've got college, you've maybe got work, and, you know, and the club's kind of, you can kind of be caught up in your own club. And I think that's kind of the development. Mine is like, Dublin Track Club is actually a training group. So I've got lots of different athletes from different clubs and different backgrounds and walks of life. And I've kind of said, right, I'm going to push through with, like, we train, our main training days are Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and it's at 9:30 or 10 in the morning, and you've got to be there. You know, if you're there, you're there. If you're not, you're not. Like, I can provide a schedule, but the power of the group and training together, it is that essence of, if you've ever seen the videos, even of Eliud Kipchoge and the Kenyans all training together, you know, that's what I'm trying to create. And also, the more I've looked at things, if you look at all athletes down through the years, they perform best when they really are in their natural environment. So America has been a great opportunity, but like, there's a lot of people that hasn't suited also. And this is kind of like giving people the opportunity. Also, when they come back from America, you know, a kit deal in an athletics is really only actually a marketing contract. Like, when you sign for Munster, you sign a playing contract, you get a wage, and you're based on your performance. It's like, are you scoring tries? Are you making the breakdown? Are you doing the job that you're doing? In athletics, that's very intangible, and obviously that the money and the finance is different there. So you've got it. My style is to support as well. For I've got somebody like Sean Tobin, had a scholarship in all Mississippi, and he came back and he had nothing here. There was no sense of support. Wasn't necessarily good enough at the time to get government funding. So, you know, I ended up putting them up in my family home with me and my dad here in Malahide, and you know, we put them together, and he came 10th in the European cross country, and he's been top 20 in the European cross 3 years in a row now. Now, one of those was the first year in all Mississippi, but that's probably one of the most consistent performers by an Irish senior athlete at a European cross. So you're trying to give them that type of a leg up. It's kind of old school as well, in that sense of, you know, trying to give people digs and kind of setting something up from the ground and really trying to develop it. But really, we're trying to give the athletes, it's a simple game. I see Jack Charlton's 85, and I heard on RT earlier that he said, like, you know, I want to make it the most simple game plan possible. And really, our training is very, very simple, straightforward. And, you know, there's little bits to it, but like, running is very simple. As I was talking to Nick there, like, it's volume, consistency and intensity. Like, so if you run a lot, the more you run, the better you'll get. So that's the challenge. How much can you get an athlete to run without getting injured? And then obviously you're putting in your little bits and pieces and obviously the skill element of running and the proper training sessions and getting ready for the events.
Phelan, we're in a different world now, and we're about to be in a very different world when we do get back to some sort of normality. So how is what you want to do with Dublin Track Club going to be affected by social distancing and any other regulations that are going to be still around in the months to come?
Yeah, well, I suppose, like, we've had a lot of challenges. Like, Michelle Finn, who was tracking for the Olympics, Sean Tobin and Paul Robinson, who's coached by Nick, but he's based here and trains with us too. They went to Australia in January. They got caught in the bushfires. They had to go from altitude back to Melbourne. Then obviously they had to get the plane back when the COVID outbreak. And, you know, for the athletes here, they've, like, say Michelle, she's invested, you know, her life into this Olympics. It's been impacted, you know, so all your money and your earnings are gone. There's no road races. There's no ability to generate income, particularly if you're not on a grant or on a kit deal. So, you know, a number of the athletes have faced that challenge. I've got Hiko Tenosa, who's a new Irish citizen, and he's kind of stuck in a house on Adelaide Road there on his own. And Andrew Coskren also, he took up the second half of college of his final year to get ready for this Olympics. So they're all manageable challenges, but like, again, I'm sure everybody in every sense has been impacted. So, but in terms of athletics, it is the sense that there's minimal money anyway, actually, in the sport. And now your ability to earn, like, you know, €1,000 can get you a long way. Like, you know, like Sonny O'Sullivan's 10 mile in Cove, that was going to be a big one. And in April, that was a chance to win pretty much close to €1,000. And that would, like, keep you going for another month or two and help you. So, you know, what we have to do.
What about the practicalities, though? The practicalities of racing. Lots of people can go out and have a run on the road and stay away from everybody. But how can you race against people and stay apart?
Yeah, well, I think they have to this is where we have to take a bit more direction. Like, obviously, the Bundesliga is starting next week. I just had to run down to the shops there to get the shopping for my dad for the dinner there before coming on. And, you know, there's a lot of people close together. So, like, they're not, it's not feasible. Like, at the moment, what is this guideline of there'll be groups of four allowed to come back and train together? But, like, if that was 2 meters apart, that's a wingspan of 8 meters, like, either lengthways or, you know, horizontally or vertically, which is, like, kind of, like, you know, silly or impossible. So the runners, and I think that sense of hygiene has to be taken into account. You're going to be running close to each other. It's non-contact. So even before that and going forward, we have to have these kind of practical things, like, is it, you know, having towels, hand hygiene, sanitizer, again, you know, limited touching. Like in a race, what can happen? And I think Sonia mentioned last week about some of the horse races, they were pretty close to each other anyway. So you might brush shoulder to shoulder, an elbow, you stand on somebody's heel. But generally, there's minimal contact. Okay, there's that sense of the Petri dish effect that you could have eight people on top of each other. So smaller fields. But I do think that this sense, I think we were talking earlier, but the sense of fear will go away. But we do need to kind of get that ability that we can kind of run kind of close to each other. You're talking at least a foot beside each other to kind of gain that sense of a draft. People have seen that Eddie Chog and the laser effect. But also we kind of want to be able to get people back running, which is the first phase of nearly every, you know, sport, and that they can, like, even if they're doing a warm-up jog in pairs, you know, that would be a similar, you know, thing for a lot of, you know, sports, that people can do that. And without this sense of what you see pervading now is, like, before the lockdown, actually, you know, this sense of social distancing and this, you know, human policing. Like, there was a guy, we were down near, and we were doing our best to social distance and stuff, but a guy was driving down the street, speeding, with his phone in his hand, driving and shouting out at us, social distancing and recording us. You know, so, you know, there's going to have to be that sense of how do we get that common sense going, that people can actually train, and that the hygiene is clearer than, you know, the PC brigade of saying social distancing, social distancing. Like, when you walk down your street, you cannot stay 2 meters apart now anymore. There's too many cars and all those things. So safer guidelines have to be guided, probably even by Athletics Ireland and, you know, the government, which I think they are, realistically, they are trying to have that message of let's use our common sense, because, you know, again, small groups, get people run together. And then in terms of the racing, could you have, you know, small races? Sonia mentioned dual meets and these smaller meets. Also, you know, back in the day, you had, like, even like these village meets and the club sports and the village sports. Like, I live in Malahide. Like, I don't know who's the fastest man in Malahide. Like, you know, that hasn't probably happened in God knows how many years. But you could kind of develop the sense of the local communities and the clubs being empowered to implement small meets. And then they can be staying in their, you know, localized areas. And then, you know, there could be qualification into, you know, say Leinster, Munster, Connacht and Ulster, and then onto the national level. But we really do need to look more. I think it's really a case of hygiene, like hand sanitizers, towels, fresh clothing, and you know, that sense of not being in somebody's, let's say, grill in athletics. Now, obviously, I think Aina Falvey, he's the world rugby doctor, he's kind of putting forward, and he said that there will be rugby in 2020. So, I mean, if there can be rugby, you know, I think, you know, athletics and athletics races probably should be, you know, installed probably, you know, at least in maybe July at the latest. You know, I think even June, like, money talks, if the Premier League's June 9th, Bundesliga 15th, you know, and, you know, sadly, athletics isn't exactly going to be, maybe it will be now because there's been no sport on, but, like, we generally don't have that sense of a crowd issue. There's never too many people there, so there can be a lot of officials involved, but, you know, you can limit the numbers, and there's definitely a way of, you know, virtually recording the things. Like, World Athletics had this garden clash of the pole vault with Mondo Duplantis and Sam Kendricks and Renaud Lavillenie. And, like, within 24 hours, there's a quarter of a million viewers. So the popularity of the sport is there, the interest is there. And, like, they were in their back garden. So you don't really need, you know, on one level, too much to really, you know, get the sport going, getting that sense of interest and competition. And, you know, so there will be that sense of, like, okay, some virtual stuff, but even Sonia said that we really will need to get into the racing. Back in the old days, you know, there was dual meets, so you could have Clonliffe Harriers versus Raheny Shamrock, and you could have, you know, 2 to 4 athletes running an 800 or a 15. And then obviously it is a bit easier in the sprints, saying the 1 and the 2, you can have that. Donoghue said it last week, the spacing of the lanes. So you could certainly have that in the 1, 2 and the 4, but you know, middle distance probably is what, and that sense of even the upwards to the marathon, that's the real probably that generates the most interest in the sport, like globally from a you know, an average sports fan's point of view, and that's going to be the challenge, bringing that all back right up to the Dublin Marathon or whatever.
Well, Phelan, you certainly have some great ideas there, and hopefully we will see some of them put to use at some stage over the next few months. I like the fastest person on Game On. We might incorporate that into the show.
Is Ruby allowed on the horse?
Phelan Kenny, thanks so much for joining us. That was great. Fastest person on Game On, I'd say it's me.
I'd say it wouldn't be far off it. I'll be honest, if it's a race to food, I'll beat you every time.
You actually will, yeah. Game On 2FM.